It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today on First Lady and Friends, we had a beautiful conversation with a new friend, Kristen Andrus. She is doing incredible things in the community, but also shared with us her amazing passion projects. Can't wait for you to have this conversation with us. Let's get proximate. Welcome to First Lady and Friends. We are thrilled to be here today. We have an amazing guest. She's a new friend of mine in the last little while. We have gotten to know each other through, first of all, I think through our campaign. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, we've really participated on some projects together. And she's actually, her name is Kristen Andrus, and many of you know her. But she is on our Show Up Utah board, and we're thrilled that she's there, and we've been doing a lot of projects together, and it's just been so much fun for me to get to know you, Kristen. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, let's get into this. For those of that don't know you, a lot of people know you from social media, your big presence on social media, Instagram. So for those that don't,
yeah,
that have been living under an Instagram rock, let's talk about your background. Where did you grow up? Tell me about your family and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, so I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, Walnut Creek, California, and as a lot of parents from out of state want, they want you to come to BYU. And at the time, BYU was not my thing. So I came to University of Utah as an out-of-stater. And I actually loved my time here. And it was amazing. And then I moved back to California and then worked. And many years later, met Jeremy Andrus, got married. And he had started with Skull Candy, which was a startup out of Park City, which brought us back to Utah. I never expected it. And it was always going to be a short-term gig. And so it's kind of like, oh, we'll be here for a year or two. And as Utah does, it sucks you in. And so just a couple of years ago, we've been here 15 years, and I told him, okay, I think we're going to stay. We love it so much. I'm a California girl at heart, but truthfully, I'm especially with what's been going on lately and COVID, I'm thrilled to be in Utah. I love it. It's become, you know, home and just such a wonderful, inclusive place that we have really grown to love. And both of us are not from here. So it's been really fun to make it our home.
And your husband grew up in California as well?
No, he grew up mostly in the East Coast. So he was Boston, Maryland for high school, kind of moved around a lot. But he loves Utah even more than I do.
That's so cool. So tell me about your parents, siblings, where...
Yeah, so I have a couple sisters in California. I do have a brother here. My parents are still in the Bay Area. We grew up kind of a typical Bay Area family. I was a synchronized swimmer, actually.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes. And so I did that competitively and was on the junior national team. I traveled the world doing that throughout high school. And then when my senior year came and it was, do you go to college, which, you know, I was kind of looking at the U, or do you stay at home and train to go to the Olympics? And it was kind of one of those big decisions in my life that I decided I'm done. And I always say I'm waterlogged. My kids are like, why don't you get in the pool? Why don't you get your hair wet? And I'm like, I'm waterlogged. I did morning and afternoon practice my entire life. I had to jump in a cold pool 5,000 times. I don't have to do that anymore. So I decided to go to college and put my swimming career aside, which I'm thrilled I did. It was definitely the right decision, which led me to Utah and then back to Utah when we got married.
Hmm. Well, so that's really interesting that, you know, I played sports in high school. I wasn't great, but I watched people that were great and I watched the coaches. And I remember there was this one particular friend of mine that was just, she was incredibly talented. And I remember thinking, oh, she's going to, you know, D1 sports. She's going to be doing all this. And then she got to the end of high school and said, Yeah, I'm done. So is it a burnout thing? Is it putting too much in one sport? Like, what right. was it for you?
You know, it's such a fine line. And this was, I'm 42 years old. So this was back in the day where we weren't putting all of our eggs in one basket like we are now. I look at my daughter who's a gymnast and dancer, and their practices right now are insane. But this was, I was actually exceptional in that I practiced so much. Okay. Where it felt like in high school people would, you know, I guess gymnasts have right, but yeah. notoriously done that. And I think it's burnout. And I'd say the same for synchronized swimming, because we were doing that at such an early age and 10 years into it. It was also that you devote your whole life to it. For what? You know, at the end, you kind of realize, and you realize actually it's for learning to work as a team. And it's, there's actually so much. I gained so much from doing it. It kept me out of trouble, which is, you know, half of it. It keeps you really busy, engaged, friendship, learning to work with a coach, traveling the world on my own with a team. Like, I just developed self-confidence, and then obviously performing and hard work. And there's 100 different things that it did for me. Sometimes I wonder, wow, did I miss out on some of my high school experience? I did, but I'm wondering, maybe that wouldn't have necessarily been a good thing either, because yeah. you want to be busy, but then that over busy, which I think a lot of our kids are now, can be detrimental. Yeah. And so I really think there's that fine line. I have a daughter who's kind of artsy in guitar and singing, and I don't think she has enough to do. But then I have a dancer who is overbooked for sure. And so I'm always trying to find that fine line. And I think with my swimming, it was way too much, but it ended up being okay. So I do think in some sports, there's definitely burnout and you're just ready like for the next chapter.
Mm, yeah. Well, it's an interesting thought about your kids and what the balance is. I read a book called Range recently, mm-hmm. and it started out talking about like Tiger Woods and Roger Federer, who, you know, you've got a professional golfer and a professional tennis player, and Tiger was like from two, that's all he yes. did. And where Roger Federer had played soccer, did all this stuff, really didn't pick up tennis till a little bit later. And even then wasn't like crazy into it. And so I've thought a lot about our kids. Now, you know, with our kids, it was like, well, what can we find that they're pretty good at?
That too.
We didn't have the, you know, like, which sport are they going to be, you know, do they have to pick? It was like, what can we find that, you know, that's probably not sports that maybe they still feel some confidence
yeah,
in.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that's, you know, as a mom and as parents, it's that balancing. How do you do that? What's your strategy with your kids?
My strategy is if they ever tell me if they're heavily involved in something and they say, I don't want to go today, that I'm like, you need to decide, like, are you all in or are you not? Because I have six kids. I am driving you guys around in 100 different directions. And if you're not all in this sport or whatever it is that you choose, then we're not going to be like. And so my daughters I have four daughters and my sons are young, so they're in 100 different little funny things right now because they're five. But my daughters that are all in, which is soccer and dance, they want to go 100% of the time. They never say, I want to stay home. I'd rather play with friends. It's something that they're super devoted to. And so I am on board with that. Mm-hmm. The minute that they kind of start saying, I'm bored, I don't want to do it, I'd rather hang out with my friends, then it's like, that's great. I am totally okay if we quit and move on to do something else, because I actually really am. Like, yeah. I don't need my daughter in 15 hours of dance a week, but she chooses it. Mm. And so I will support that. But as soon as things start changing, and when she, you know, wants to not take a couple classes this year, I was thrilled because all of her friends were taking more classes and she chose less. And I thought, that's great. What a good balance. So I'm just supportive of where they're at. And also, like, one of my daughters was in gymnastics and literally burned out at the age of 9.
Yeah.
It was so intense. And I was so grateful that we made that change at 9 and not 13. Yeah. It gave her so many years back and so many hours that we had back with her. So I really have it like child directed, I would say.
I
support them as it goes. But if they're pulling back, we're going to make a family decision on, you know, what that means.
Well, you look at what happened with like Simone Biles and I mean, because I did gymnastics when I was a kid. And for me, it was like, I lived in this little small town and there just wasn't opportunities and my parents didn't have the money to like do more than what we were doing. I was like bummed because I would have loved to keep going. Also that I got really tall and not really. I mean, I'm not that tall, but for a gymnast, I'm 5'7" is really tall.
Yes.
But it's an interesting thought about how we sort of balance these things and
We're our own worst enemies. Like in the end, us as parents are the ones that have driven this. I've always said there's this A, right, where you're 15, 20 hours a week, soccer, football, volleyball, whatever it is. And then there's like rec that's maybe an hour a week and you don't really develop. I'm always like, where's the B team? Like, where's that team that's like, maybe it's a couple hours a week. It's awesome. It's not super uber competitive. Because I think parents, especially in Utah, we have so many kids here. Yeah. I feel a lot of mom and dads as I look, like I'm not that dance mom that's pushing. I'm kind of on the sidelines. And I'm like, it's some of those parents, which, you know, I'm not judging them. I'm just saying we really push for this extreme. And a lot of us, the majority of us are probably okay with the B team.
Yeah.
And our kids are probably thrilled with the B team. Off with the B team.
Yeah.
And in the end, you go to college and you're like, what did we do this for?
Yeah.
Not many of our kids are going on scholarships.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember in my husband's sister was like really into volleyball and she was great. She was really good. And I remember a friend of theirs said, hey, you know, you need to get into these club leagues and you need to, and again, we're in a small town. So it's like, it's not just going to it. It's driving for an hour and a half before you get there and then driving home. And this is a couple of days a week. And so I remember her saying to, you know, this friend saying like, you need to do this, get her in these club leagues, you know, and it's like the money, it's so expensive. And I remember just thinking to myself, if you saved up all that money that you spent on the club league, because she was talking about scholarships, like she'll get a good scholarship, da da da. And I was like, I'm just not sure, you know, economically, if it actually is worth it, you know, because. Right. The amount of money you spend, you could put that into an account for, you know, a education savings account or something.
Oh,
and I'm like, I don't
know. And the time
and the gas.
Oh my gosh, yes.
That you're
yes.
In the car. Anyway, so it's an interesting, sorry, that's totally a side conversation, but I think it's an important one that, you know, as parents, we're all sort of grappling with. I remember my son was just playing Little League Baseball and loved it. Absolutely loved it. He had a great coach. He had this team that kind of stayed together the whole time. And they got really good. And this coach was just fantastic. And he just got the best out of these boys. And it was such a good experience. And then he was kind of at that age where he was maybe just in middle school. And it was, they're like, oh no, you got to start going to all these tournaments where you drive everybody. You know, you got to do these club leagues and da da da. And my son was just like, I just want to play summer ball.
Yeah.
That's the B team that you're talking about.
Like, keep talking. Yeah. It's not even the B team because they're still really good. They just don't choose to go all in.
Yeah.
I'm going to start that.
Yeah. No, seriously.
I think it would be really popular.
Yeah. And it's frustrating to them because, I mean, with Gav, it was like, man, I just really like playing, you know, 2 months of summer ball or whatever it is. And I don't need to make this my life. Mm-hmm. I just am having a good time.
Yeah, it's so true.
So anyway, well, we could talk about kids and all this forever, but we want to get into some other topics when we come right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
We are back here on First Lady and Friends with my friend, Kristen Andrus. And so let's get into, we've talked about kids, we're talking about families. You and your husband met post college in California?
We actually met, we both flew in to a wedding in California where I'm from, but neither of us were living there at the time.
Oh.
But yeah. So it was
just
fortuitous.
Sort of a chance.
Yeah, I knew the bride and he knew the groom. And we ended up being sat at the same table. And he said, Jeremy Andrus. And I said, wait, I have Andruses that go to my church in Walnut Creek. And it was his grandparents. So I've known his grandparents my entire life. I knew a bunch of the aunts and uncle. But like I mentioned, he's an East Coast Andrus. So I didn't even know that his family existed. And he's 8 years older than me. So we never, you know, ran into each other until this wedding. And then dated for a very long time. And then we got married.
I love it. Yeah, Spencer and I were, well, if you can count on a mission dating, but it was, we hung out a long time.
Right, yeah.
I always say to people, we've been hanging out a long time.
You could say that about us as well.
So then you met, long dating period.
Yeah, so we were long distance. I was in Southern California. He was in San Francisco. He's kind of a spreadsheet guy. And so marriage isn't, there's not like a spreadsheet answer to picking the right one. So anyways, I did hang around long enough that we ended up getting married. He had joined Skull Candy. He was a third employee at Skull Candy up in Park City. And I was imagining us in this San Francisco apartment, which is, you know, in the area that I'm from. I was so excited. And so when he took his Subaru and headed out to Park City, Utah, I was like, what? You're going where? And I mean, I joked that we thought it was a candy company when we first got the call about it. And he gave up his job and took a chance. And so we moved out here right after we got married. And I guess you could say the rest is history, but there's a lot.
There's
of
a lot.
Years and
yada, yada, yada.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so then you start having children right away.
So, yeah. So let's see. I was running a Curves Fitness Center.
Okay.
When we came here, I thought I want to do something. I'd worked, you know, I didn't have kids until I was 28. And so I had a lot. We had traveled a ton and had so much fun. And I would go with him to China and Hong Kong and Russia and like all these places with Skull Candy and on our own. And so it's kind of like, oh, okay, you know, we should be having kids. I'm 28, which doesn't seem as old now, but 15 years ago it was. And he was busy, head down, traveling, gosh, probably 200 days a year, wow. Never home before 9 o'clock. And so I get pregnant with my first, and it was really, really hard. I have 6 kids now, and I tell people that one child for me was so much harder than 6 kids is now. With a husband who worked, who had, you know, big ambitions. And I laugh because I look back and remember this conversation where it's a startup, right? You're all in. And every time he got home late, every time he told me he was traveling, I think I'd cry. And like, it was just a disaster. And so he sat me down and was like, okay, I can go get a 9-to-5 job. If you are not in, I cannot do this. Like, are we in this? Is this Team Andrus or is this Kristen kicking against the pricks every single time, every day? And he was kind about it, but very straightforward. And I was really called to repent. I was like, oh my gosh, I am fighting against him. And this is what I want. This company and this opportunity, we had no idea what it was going to bring, but I could tell there was something special and it was bringing opportunities to our family that, you know, he joked, like, I could be a librarian. Is that what you'd prefer? Because that seems what you want. And I said, no, I'm in. And that really changed the course of our marriage, of like the teamwork mentality that we have. And I talk a lot about marriage now on Instagram. And I laugh because if you could have seen us back at Cucina Toscana, having this conversation 14 years ago, we were, you know, we were not the couple that we are now.
Okay.
So it's kind of interesting watching like our path and him coming to me in a really kind way and saying, like, are you in or are you out? Because if you're not in, I can't do this alone. And so we've really taken that and run with it, which has been fun.
I love that. And I think it's a lot the way Spencer and I have operated too. I mean, I think people always are surprised, at least and before now. I mean, I think they know now that this is kind of how we operate. But I think, I mean, in the political world, you know, you just didn't. There's times I've never met somebody's spouse. Because it's like they just don't kind of do things together or it's not sort of a team effort. It's just like you're doing your thing and I'm doing mine. And then, you know, however that comes together, which is fine. I mean, that's
right.
Again, it's no right or wrong way to do things. But, you know, Spencer and I think have that similar sort of we're kind of in this together mentality.
Yes, absolutely.
So then Skull Candy gets sold.
Yeah, so we end up going public. It's a rough go. And he ends up taking a year off. And we say it was...
What's that like?
Well, it was off. He was actually like working with Solimir Capital and he had a bunch of like meetings, but he was working from home, which at the time was absolutely unheard of, right?
Yes, right.
This is probably 9 years ago. And so he took on this thing with Solimir and really just spent a year trying to figure out what's next. And really that was like, what company are we going to buy? What are we going to do? And we traveled and it was the best year ever because it also recentered us. Mm. And it was really great because we could look back and say, what did we do right this last 8 years? And what did we do wrong? And how would we do it differently? And so it really was this cool reset, which a lot of families don't get.
No. Yeah.
And he's such a centered, grounded man, which I am so grateful for every day of my life, that he took a lot of self inventory and completely did it differently when we bought Traeger. So what happened is a year later, we bought Traeger Grills, which actually was a disaster for the first couple of years that no one really knows about, but it was really, really hard. And we almost walked away and then we bought it outright and then we're able to move it to Utah and do what we wanted. But he set it up in a way that was like family first. I can't be involved in every single thing. He really looked back. And I think it's so important for all of us to do that, right? Like, how did I do it right with my first baby or business or whatever that may be? And how can I do it better this time? And when you really can be thoughtful about that, it can really change the course of how things go. And that absolutely happened with Traeger and with our life and family and, you know, allowed me. It was fun. I was really involved in the beginning and I kind of had to be because it was small and new. We literally got rid of every employee in Oregon and totally hired everybody here. So it was neat to be a part of the beginning, but I had two kids at that time and ended with six. And so I was busy doing other things as well. And, it's been such a fun gig, though, that our family is obsessed with. And it's been just so much fun and so much fun to see the growth. And
yeah. Health. And so you've more involved in the beginning, less involved over time with the actual business. But then your focus shifted, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we had a couple of, I guess you could say like successful outcomes where things we sold part of the business and different things. And I don't even know exactly how it all started, but I remember I was on a spin bike and I got the text from Jeremy, like transaction completed, meaning we sold like half of Traeger or something like that. And I thought it was going to be elation and excitement and oh my gosh, this is, and I literally bawled my eyes out. Mm. And the heaviness and responsibility and weight of like what that meant really weighed heavily on my heart. And I thought, I literally remember sitting in my car thinking, we can choose one direction and buy a car or a house or clothes for my kids, or we could give back. And so I called Jeremy and I'm like, let's go down to the shelter. And we picked up our kids from school and we went and bought a bunch of food and we went to the teen shelter and we've never looked back. Like that's just what we do and it's who we are. And it used to kind of be a hobby. And now that six of my kids are in school, I joke that it's become my day job, which is like 8 day jobs.
Yes.
With many different organizations. And I'm in love and so passionate about giving back in my community, our community.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. So cool. And I think Utah is known. That's sort of we're known for that, in our corporate world. I think it's in our DNA, which I think is beautiful, that you guys have done that and that you're working through that. How do your kids deal with that? And how has your family changed through that?
That's a great question. So I love it because I'm such a big fan of my kids being uncomfortable. I want them to be in situations and in apartments and neighborhoods that they're not used to. And so I always say we try to get out of our bubble as often as possible. And it's really important to me. We mentor a refugee family and we do different things. And I'm bringing my kids with me as often as possible. when we go to the neighborhood house and do dinners. I want my kids there. And I laugh because when they're like, I'm hungry, I'm cold. And I'm like, perfect. That's exactly how I want you. Yeah. Like, you are last in line for the food and you're cold. But guess what? When we come back in a month from now, these kids are still going to be here enduring the same thing, going through the same thing. And like, I love bringing them along with me. Any chance I get, I absolutely do, whether it's with the food bank or the road home, we do meals. And what I do love is we also do things that like are meaningful to our family. Yeah. And so we're not trying to save the whales because whales are not important to our family. And that's not going to like stick in our philanthropy and our giving back model of what works in our home. But we care about food and we love to cook and we love kids and we love single moms and we love, like, we've just found these passions in our family that becomes, you know, we love Primary Children's Hospital and Ronald McDonald. And one of my daughters loves doing that. And so finding things that your kids love, my kids never push back going to these things, which is really cool. But it's also become part of our family culture. And they honestly don't know any different because we've been doing it from a young age.
Yeah. Also, I love that. And I think it's so beautiful to have your kids, you know, seeing that and experiencing that. One thing that I've noticed about you too is that, and I think most people probably have if they follow you on Instagram and social media, is you've kind of do this thing where you love to host.
Yeah.
You love to have parties and yeah. dinners and you, like you said, centered around food. But the experience I had was that you also, it's not just that, but it's this really connecting with people. And yeah. tell me a little bit about your conversation starters at dinners. This was super fun. And I just think it's such a great idea.
Yeah. So we do. And what I love too is I talk, it's funny. My first Instagram was actually called Life at My Table.
Okay.
And that was so many years ago, but I look back and I'm like, my Instagram is still Life at My Table. You know, yeah. like it actually, like, I love that still rings true so many years later. And so I have people like you and dignitaries and amazing famous people, but I also have people that are struggling and going through hard things. And so I want my table to be full of people that are different than me, that look different than me, think differently than me, can teach my kids things that I could never teach them, that have life experiences that I will never have. So that's super, super important. That's not just my friends that look like me and it's the same friends that come over and over. Like, you should see my table on Sunday night. I am so excited. It is going to be people from all over the world, but that live like 5 miles.
Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about Utah. But to answer your question, we did these like table topics. And so you answer a question that's like, what's your favorite book and why? Or it's just these like little questions, but it really gets the conversation going. So you can have people from all different backgrounds. And then you get answers that are so fabulous. You could sit there for hours and you get to know people so well. And it goes so much deeper than keeping it either just like intimate conversations, one-on-one. But it really gets the whole table involved, and it's
fun. Super fun. I was going to say, at first, I to be honest, I'm like, oh, because I mean, it's some people I don't know, some people I did know, but right. some people when we were there, it was like, oh, there's some that I don't know, and yeah. I'm like, who am I sharing this?
Right, you know? Right, right.
But by the end, you do know them,
yes.
and instead of talking about little surfacey things,
yeah.
We were literally deep diving into
totally.
Some. So, I mean, I think there were a few tears shed too.
Oh, absolutely. And personalities right. come out
yeah.
so much more than just typical dinner conversation.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Well, I want to keep talking about your passion project. So we'll be right back. We're back here with Kristen Andrus, my friend, and we are really excited. I'm really excited to talk about all the things that you are doing currently, all your philanthropy and your passion projects, which are many. So let's just start. What's top of mind right now? What are you working on?
Yeah, I do have a lot going on. And as I just want to like a disclaimer, my little asterisk at the beginning of this, if you hear philanthropy and you're like, check out, like, oh, that's not me. Yeah. I don't do like philanthropy is like writing big checks. And I want people to know that philanthropy has nothing to do with money. everything I'm going to talk about right now and everything that I'm working on is not about me giving money to any organization. It's not about writing a check. It's about literally, and this is like a Melinda Gates quote, but it's using whatever resources you have at your fingertips and using it to change the world. And so I love that. Like, I think sometimes philanthropy seems so high and far and that it's not attainable, but all of us can give back and have philanthropy in our truly our daily lives. And so I don't want anyone checking out as we talk about this.
And sometimes it's we think of philanthropy as the money part of it, but really it's service.
Exactly.
And we can all do service.
Yeah.
And in whatever way. And I think people always think of like these big, huge projects or these things when it could be taking dinner to a neighbor.
Exactly.
It could be connecting with somebody in a nursing home that hasn't seen their family. Like
exactly.
Whatever that looks like, it doesn't have to be giant.
Yes.
So I love that you said
that. Season of life. And it's funny, even my mom's like, I think women are going to, they can't do what you're doing. And I'm like, no, I know, but I couldn't either 10 years ago because I was home with all my kids. And so there's a season to everything. And I'm just sharing what I'm doing and so sharing concepts. So, okay, the one I'm most excited about because it's personal and really one that I've started on my own because everything else I do is filling gaps around our community. But this one is also filling a gap, but it's something that I've taken on as my own. And I was sitting at a middle school in Murray and we were doing, taking frozen turkeys and throwing them in a truck and getting canned sweet potatoes. And under her breath, she's like, this is great, but what we really need are pads and tampons for our girls in schools. And this aha moment of, wait, really? That's a need. And you think about it, if you have food insecurity, which one in five during COVID, one in five girls in Utah, in your daughter's school, are food insecure. They do not have enough food at home. If they don't have enough food at home, they do not have products and accessible products if they have their period. And this passion project really rose out of the fact that no one is talking about it. My dear friend Emily McCormick has been talking about it up in the legislature, but nothing's really happened yet. And so last February, I went online and I said, hey, friends, guess what? This is an issue. Not only is it an issue in Utah, but it's an issue everywhere. And it's actually an issue across the world. And just like me, so many jaws dropped and they said, it is. And then everyone, just like I said, of course it is, as you think about this. And as I've traveled to 100 schools and talked to 100 parents and kids, the stories and the personal stories of parents not even knowing that their child has a period because they've never even asked for anything because they knew that it wasn't even a possibility. It's very real. It's happening in the school near you. And so it like truly is. Even my high school, I'm in a very wealthy community and my high school pantries, like we need more. Like you've dropped off a lot, but we're through it and we need more. And so it's called Sister Goods. And I teamed up with the Utah Food Bank who I went to and I said, hey, what? You guys see what I'm doing online and gathering money and dropping off literally a bunch of pads and tampons in my Suburban. Like this is not sustainable. And so they said, well, I don't know. We've never asked. And within 12 hours, they got back to me and said, this is the biggest response we've ever had in the history of the Utah Food Bank for any product we've ever tried to place. What can we do? Mm. And so I said, let's partner up. And they were actually piloting a program for them where all of the funds that we raise go directly to the Utah Food Bank for period products. So it's been really exciting to see the people get behind this. I had you come to one of our lunches, which meant the world to me, and just educating women that maybe it's $5, maybe it's doing a fundraiser with your PTA, maybe it's going to the local Boys and Girls Club or Head Start or Crisis Nursery, because every woman, you know, across the state and world is affected by this that goes without in certain ways. And so it has been really amazing. There's this children's book that says, what do you do with an idea? And I tear up every time I think about it because I thought, what if I had turned a blind eye or deaf ear on that social worker that said, what we really need are pads and tampons. And she said it that quietly. And then it just became this beautiful movement that so many women have gotten behind and they've been doing it on their own. So in their own schools, in their own backyards, in their own areas, they're doing Sister Good campaigns and fundraisers. And if they don't have the money, they're asking other people to contribute. and do it, which has been so cool and empowering to see.
So great. And not only are you going around doing fundraisers or helping people fundraise and partnering, which I think, by the way, is one of the smartest things you can do. And what we've been doing with Show Up is really partnering with organizations that have the infrastructure in place. So, you know, you're not going to, you know, instead of reinventing the wheel of you driving around, you know, that's nuts. But, you know, the Utah Food Bank, this is what they do.
Exactly.
They distribute products. Yes. They distribute food. They distribute these things, and they have a mechanism for that. And so, you know, I think it's the smartest thing you can do. But also there's another avenue that you're working through too.
Yeah. And so this is what's so exciting. And I sat at a table with some women 2 days ago, and I was the dumbest one at the table. And we were talking about policy. And I will admit, because I am the first to admit my strengths and my weaknesses. And one of my weaknesses is a lot of what I do and a lot of the gaps I fill are Band-Aids. And I'm, you don't have weekend food bags. Okay, I'll be there. Your PTA needs help. I'll be there. And I'm putting Band-Aids on problems that already exist. And so my friend Emily McCormick and a bunch of other women were already kind of doing this. And so I've come on the private side of things because we're going to be doing some fundraising, but we're working on actual policy with the state of Utah, with the legislature to put pads and tampons in all public schools, grades 6 through 12.
Yeah.
It is a big, huge undertaking, but we are working so hard. And it's actually this magical experience of sitting around their moms, right? They're not these high, powerful women that are writing policy. It's like they're just moms that want to make a difference. Yep. They're moms who can actually go to Walgreens and buy the product that they need for their daughters. But we know that there's so many women 2 miles, 5 miles away from us that cannot do it. And we want to make real sustainable change. So it has been eye-opening. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm actually going to attend every meeting because I realize how little I know. But this is where this is what you do. This is where real change is made. Yep. And it's powerful. And I hope we succeed. And if we don't, we'll just, you know, keep trying. Yeah. But it's the first time that I feel like I'm actually doing something that's going to last more than a weekend food bag or...
Well, I love that, what you're saying, and that's the idea of getting upstream of the problem. And I think that's what we try to do. You know, Band-Aids, we need those as well.
Right.
But we do need to look more long-term and how do we get ahead of some of these things? So I think that's beautiful. And I do have to say, one of my dear friends in the legislature over the years was Representative Duckworth out in Magna, and she's... you've met her.
Yeah.
She is amazing.
Yes.
But she carried this bill for many years. Anyway, she finally got it across and then they repealed it. Anyway.
Yes.
So what you're doing is really important because it's, again, a continuation of something I think she worked on for many years. And again, it's talking, not reinventing the wheel, has this all in place.
Yes. There's been so much groundwork.
Yes.
And you have to give, you're right, so much. It's just unreal what people have done. And even though in the end, they've still done so much, even though it failed for them, they've done so much for us that continue.
So then now you can pick it up.
Yes.
And continue with it and take advantage of all the things
Absolutely.
That she, and the passion she had for the project as well. So,
so
cool. And knowing the process is really important. And I think, I encourage everyone to get involved. Whatever you're passionate about, talk to your legislators.
Totally.
I mean, people forget that
they
are accessible. And I remember Spencer, when he was in the legislature, I remember him saying those bills because they're passing hundreds of bills. It's crazy. And if you have one constituent that says, hey, this is really important to me, all of a sudden they're like, okay, all right, let's talk about this.
No,
let's get into this.
Your voice matters, absolutely.
It really does.
And even sitting in one of these meetings getting to know what people are doing, it's just really neat to know the process and to know what goes into it. And I think it actually makes you more willing to reach out. It makes you more willing to get involved in the process, even if you're just listening and educating yourself.
Yep.
I found that because I've always thought, the government, that's not me. I'll do the private side. You do the legislative. But now that I'm getting somewhat involved, it's thrilling. And I love learning and realizing that I'm the dumbest one in the room. Like, it's actually empowering. This is so cool. Look how much I'm learning at 42 years old.
Yeah.
How exciting. It's a whole new avenue and way of thinking, and it's exciting.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So you have a couple other, I mean, this is your big one, but there's some other organizations that you're really involved in and are passionate about. One, again, we worked on together, did a service project recently with the governor's office and his senior staff and cabinet. So fun. Ugh. One of the coolest ones we've done ever.
It was so great. I was so grateful.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that.
That you guys came. So it is called the Neighborhood House, and it's kind of in the Rose Park area. And you won't know about it until you know about it. And then once you know about it, you can't believe that you didn't know all the good that they are doing in this community. And so it's before school care, preschool, after school care, and then they also have an adult day center, daycare. And it's so cool because there's a lot of multi-generational families there. And so not only can you not go to work because your child is at home, but you have a mother who's suffering from Alzheimer's or dementia or special needs. And so it is really this full team and full approach to helping these families, once again, not just Band-Aids, but helping them truly from the ground up, helping them with housing, helping them with like little issues that they have. And they really get to know these families. So it's all on a sliding scale. So some families are paying a little bit and some families are paying more and some are paying none at all. But it's really this safety net that these families in that community have to come to and to feel loved and watched over, and that parents can go and work, have an income, know that their children are taken care of, getting rides to and from school. It's really like every time you go, you're just in tears at the love and concern and care that is shown by the teachers, by the staff. It's an incredible organization. I I chaired their gala, which I don't know if I will ever do again. It was one of the biggest undertakings of my entire life. I couldn't believe it. But as I got to know the kids and I sat with the kids and they told me just these little tiny bits of their life, I thought, the little things matter and these fundraisers matter. And it really brought it home. When I am out serving, doing good, doing philanthropy, whatever that is, I always try to make it personal. I want to hear a story. I want to understand, who am I there for? And I used to say when I'd go to Ronald McDonald House or all these different places, like, there's one person that I'm here for. And that it, during that hour or half hour or 2 hours, I would always try to find, like, why am I here today? Mm-hmm. And I always find it. And so the day that I was there with you, like, I found it. And I think it's kind of a fun way to talk to your kids, too, if you're bringing them out. But the Neighborhood House is an amazing organization, and I highly suggest you look them up. They also give you a ton of ways to give back and volunteer with your family, which I love.
Oh, it was beautiful. We asked them all those questions. Like, couldn't we bring, I mean, everybody that came was like, okay, how do I do more now?
Yeah.
Because you're just like, this is beautiful. And the facility is incredible.
Yeah.
Again, through very, very generous donations.
Yes.
And the staff just couldn't be kinder. They were just amazing. And the kids, beautiful.
I know.
I mean, we had Carlos, our transportation cabinet member, and he was on the ground doing these little things, you know, these roller things with the kids. And I mean, we just had a ball.
Well, that was so important to you and I, was like, we want the staff and we want your team to get to know these kids.
Yep.
Like, this isn't about standing and learning about it. It was like, we want one-on-one. We want interaction. We want to make this personal so that when you get to know these kids, of course you're going to come back.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Right? You can't not come back. And so I love that we were able to do that.
Yeah. And sort of I loved the model of, you know, you have your adult day center there.
I know.
And then they, obviously, right now, not as much with COVID, but hopefully post COVID.
Yes.
Again, you're having these elderly folks interacting with the kids.
Yes.
And I mean, how beautiful is that?
It is magical, and it benefits everybody.
Yeah.
The little kids love it. Of course, the older men and women love it. It is really, I love that part of it.
So cool. Well, Kristen, this has just been such a fun conversation, and we plan to do more together.
Yeah.
We have lots of projects together with Show Up, and we will continue to work on all these projects together. So thankful for you coming in today and sharing your story.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on your advisory board. I love what you're doing. Your pillars, as I'm going around to the community with all these organizations, I'm like, I'm on Abby's advisory board, and this is one of her pillars, and this fits here. Like, I'm, you know, always talking you up and what you're doing. And I love how you're not worried about the fluff. You're like, we're going to actually get stuff done. And that's happening. I was with the Road Home a couple days ago, and they love you.
Oh,
and they were just amazing. Like, she, it means business. And I'm like, yes. And that's why I love working alongside you and behind you and just like supporting you, because I really think that you're the real deal, and I appreciate all you're doing in the community, because it's hard work.
Thank you.
And you show up day after day.
Thank you so much. We have a powerful team, and this is fun. This is the fun stuff.
Yeah.
This kind of work is really rewarding.
It's true,
and yeah, right?
Yeah, like actually that's
we
true.
We do the fun stuff. So thank you again for being
thank you so
space.
Much.
You can find Kristen at Kristen Andrus on Instagram, and find Sister Goods at Sister Goods Giving on Instagram, and The Neighborhood House at NH Utah on Instagram. Thanks for being a friend.